free market principles to save the free market system.
In a world of conventional confusion,
There will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
Daddy, what do taxes pay for?
Oh, why everything. Policemen, trees, sunshine. And let's not forget the folks who just don't feel like working, God bless them.
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
Prepare to unshackle your mind.
An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Your professor has arrived. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome, everybody. It's Friday, June 27th, 2014. We're going to get to the bottom of the Iraqi situation today with the help of our old friend Scott Horton, who returns to the show. Scott is the host of Anti-War Radio for 90.7 FM KPFK in Los Angeles, 95.9 FM Chaos Radio in Austin, Texas, and 88.3 FM KUCR in Riverside, California. Monday through Friday, Scott also hosts The Scott Horton Show, 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. on Liberty Radio Network. You can find out more about Scott at his website, scotthorton.org. Scott, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Tom, how are you? Thanks for having me.
You know, Scott, a couple weeks ago I had our mutual friend Daniel McAdams on the show because we had had some, let's say, interesting developments going on in Iraq with this ISIS, ISIS organization and the takeover of key Iraqi cities. And Daniel was saying that in his judgment, now this is 2 weeks ago, but in his judgment, this could well be the most important, significant development in Iraq since 2003. Now, a couple of weeks have passed since then. What's your assessment of the significance of what's going on?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure how to rank it, but yeah, there's no overstating this. That's for sure. I mean, this, I think, you know, in context, probably what he's referring to is this could be really the final end of such a thing as even a country called Iraq anymore, as the split goes. It seems to be changing now from de facto to de jure, if you understand. It's all George Bush's fault. This is the consequence playing out from 2003 and from the American regime change there.
Can you tell us what this ISIS group is? Who are these people?
Well, you know, you might remember Colin Powell when he was lying the end of war in his big UN speech. He cited a guy named Zarqawi as supposedly being this big link between Saddam and Osama. Well, he'd always told Osama, forget it, I don't want to work for you. And Saddam only had a death mark on him. So that was, you know, some relationship, some link, but it was close enough for Colin Powell's purposes for lying us into war. But the truth is, at the time, he was safe up in Kurdistan, autonomous Kurdistan, and George Bush had refused to allow the generals to attack him. When they asked permission to attack and kill the guy before the invasion, he turned them down repeatedly because they needed their talking point. But then when it came to the war, he was the leader of a group called Ansar al-Islam that ended up at the end of 2004. So after 2 years, almost, a year and 9 months of fighting under American occupation, he finally declared his loyalty to bin Laden and declared his group Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and played a large role in the Sunni-based insurgency against the American occupation and against the Shiites that America was putting in power there, the Shiite parties and the Shiite population that America was actually cleansing Baghdad to make way for, and all the Sunnis were being pushed out of Baghdad and the Shiites were taking it over with the help of the Army and the Marine Corps. And anyway, the Army eventually killed him in 2006, and then the local Iraqi Sunni-based insurgency got sick and tired of these guys because they were more trouble than they were worth and marginalized them in what's called the Sunni Awakening, the Anbar Awakening Movement, which David Petraeus gets all the credit for it, but he has nothing to do with it. Really, he just showed up and took credit for it after the fact. And that was really because the Sunnis had lost Baghdad. They had lost the civil war for Baghdad, so they called time out, basically, to lick their wounds. And then these guys are so unpredictable and uncontrollable and brutal that they decided to marginalize them. Well, then comes, as a consequence of the inflation from the Iraq war and the whole terror war and everything, and the radicalization of the entire Middle East by this violent occupation that killed 1 million people, came the Arab Spring in 2011. And part of the Arab Spring, and there's a lot to that, but that's another show, part of the Arab Spring was an uprising in Syria. And locals started rising up against the Bashar al-Assad regime, and then so did the al-Qaeda guys. And they came over from Iraq, and a lot of Syrians have participated in the Sunni insurgency in the Iraq war. And so these guys started fighting. There's a great new article about this. I just interviewed the lady today. It's in Politico magazine, believe it or not, a long-form piece all about the history of al-Nusra and ISIS. It's really good and really worth your time. And al-Nusra is basically al-Qaeda, and so is ISIS. The difference is that ISIS stopped taking orders from Ayman al-Zawahiri, hiding out in a basement in Pakistan over there, and saying to them, stay in Iraq and let Nusra have Syria. Well, they said, screw you, old man, we don't have to do what you say, kind of a thing. And then they went back to Iraq anyway. And that's the last couple of weeks that you're talking about here, where they sacked Mosul and all the towns all the way almost to Baghdad now, and are fighting over the oil refineries and all that. So they went back to Baghdad, went back to Iraq anyway. That was in their plan anyway. But there was sort of just a dispute in lines of authority. And they said, you know what, Zawahiri, since we actually have a real Islamic state now that George Bush gave them, again, that maybe now you ought to come and bow down to the Islamic State, you know, kind of thing. So it's one of the, you know, internal politics inside al-Qaeda is basically the only difference in the split. But so now al-Qaeda in Iraq is called the Islamic State of Iraq, and now the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, or Iraq and the Sham, which typically means the Levant, right? Syria, Lebanon, and Israel, and Jordan, that the eastern Mediterranean there, but still west and north of Mesopotamia, right? That region is the Levant, al-Sham. And so now, at the same time, the Sunnis in Iraq have had it so bad since the American war and since losing Baghdad. The whole myth of the surge working was that David Petraeus was going to meet these benchmarks, which said that the Sunnis would be incorporated, and not just a few cronies, but some, you know, the Sunni population would have a stake in the government, would have jobs in the police, jobs in the military, would get on the oil dole, and none of that ever happened. America fought a war for the Shiite majority that then told George Bush, don't let the door hit you in the rear on the way out to Kuwait. Now beat it. But they never really have been able to exercise authority over the northwestern predominantly Sunni provinces, but they didn't really care to. They sure as hell weren't going to share power and wealth with them. And so now that has completely blown up. And as the ISIS guys have come back from Syria, I neglected to mention Obama and the Saudis and the Qataris have been bankrolling the revolution in Syria since 2011, not directly financing the ISIS guys, but might as well be. It's not very plausible deniability because they're giving the money and the weapons to the so-called Free Syrian Army, but it all ends up in the hands of the suicide bomber types anyway, very quickly. So Obama has really been backing al-Qaeda in Syria against Assad at the same time. Now these are the bad guys blown back in our face and in our allies' faces in Iraq. And the local Sunni population, the old Sunni insurgency, really is happy to have these guys back, at least for now, because they can be the shock troops in their, you know, like we talked about at the beginning here, their declaration of independence, basically, from the Shiite South.
Scott,
they're no longer going to tolerate. And, of course, the army just backed away because it wasn't really their territory to hold. It's a Shiite army. It wasn't really their territory to hold, so they fell back to Baghdad. And now it's the, if you can believe it, this is the calm in the eye of the storm before all hell breaks loose and we figure out what does ISIS do now.
Scott, let me jump in here.
Do they try to provoke the Shiites into invading Mosul? They try to attack American interests and try to bait Barack Obama into reinvading, which I think would probably be exactly what they want to do. We're just waiting to see.
All right, look, I want to know, how is it possible? I mean, how is it possible? How is it possible even for the American regime, which I can, you can't put anything past them in terms of incompetence, stupidity, or evil. But for heaven's sake, presumably they want to be coherent. And yet, how can it be? Like, what could be the thought process by which they want to destabilize Assad in Syria, who is himself trying to fight against the very people the Americans now want to fight against in Iraq. Like, what do they realize there's a contradiction here? Are they willing to acknowledge this? Or do they just think about one part of the world at a time?
Well, you know, I think all of that is at play. Part of it is, you know, ready, fire, aim, as one writer put it recently. But, you know, also, don't make the mistake now, Tom. You're a good libertarian and you know better. Don't make the mistake of confusing the national interest of America as it could possibly be conceived with the interests of the American empire in the Middle East.
Exactly. So I want to know, what are their interests? That's what I want to know. What are they doing
here? Yeah, so Al-Qaeda is the threat to you and me that our government has made for us, of course. But Iran doesn't really threaten us, but Iran threatens American hegemony in the Middle East. And so Barack Obama put it in plain English to Jeffrey Goldberg in The Atlantic 2 years ago. Why are we doing this in Syria? Because we're trying to take Iran down a peg by weakening Assad. And there are two reasons that they care, two or three reasons they really care so much about Iran. The first reason, and I think, and foremost, is because that's what Israel wants. Because the Likud Party, right-wing nationalist coalition that rules Israel, they're a horrible fascist regime, and they need a foreign enemy even more than the American empire needs a foreign enemy. And so they're constantly beating the drum about Iran, pretending Iran is a nuclear weapons threat when they've never spent 1 minute making nuclear bombs over there. This whole time it's been a giant lie all along, and they can't stand it. And they have so much power in Washington, D.C., it's almost unbelievable. And from their point of view, Iran backs Assad, backs Hezbollah, is a nuisance on their northern border. Therefore, Tom, that's why you fight for Al-Qaeda in Syria. Sorry, but that's, you know, Michael Oren, the outgoing American ambassador, said, hey, when it comes to these bad guys versus those bad guys, I choose those bad guys because they're not backed by Iran. And by those, he means Al-Qaeda. He means the bin Ladenites, the cousins of those that the butchers of New York. But because that's Israel's enemy, it's supposed to be America's priority, which is absolute madness and it's treason, frankly. Sorry. The other thing is, there's also a serious grudge, and I've come to understand this. There's a serious grudge against Iran for declaring independence from America back in 1979 in the first place. They have no right to declare independence from the American empire any more than Castro is forgiven for declaring independence from the American empire. And it's just absolutely unacceptable. And if they can get away with it, literally, they at least can't get away with it without suffering forever for it. And so any excuse, endless sanctions, endless marginalization, et cetera. And then, you know, yeah, oil hegemony and whatever, but none of that really works because the Iranians are selling their oil to China all day long, and America can't do anything about that anyway. So, you know.
Well, Scott,
oil hegemony is not as much as it is just, you know, military hegemony and dominance over every political system on the planet.
Well, then what is it exactly that the neocons are calling for to be done? Like, I can see what they want to have happen, but what are their specific plans, or what is it that they would like to have happen if they had one of their own in the White House? What would that person be doing now? Obviously not returning X number of American ground troops into there. I mean, presumably almost nobody is going to be stupid enough to advocate that. So what are they advocating and what's wrong with it?
Well, I mean, Bill Kristol and Frederick Kagan are saying in the Weekly Standard, yes, send in the ground troops.
Well, they are,
I don't want to hear your excuses, and I don't want to hear your, you know, Vietnam syndrome and whatever. It has to be done. And they don't even care. They're actually kind of happy to more or less admit that, yes, okay, fine, it's all our fault, right? It's Bill Kristol and Robert Kagan, Fred's brother, who are most responsible for this entire project. Fred is, to a great degree, responsible for the surge, doubling down the war in 2007, the massive failure there with all the accompanying violence. And they are saying, yes, what are you going to do? You have to send in the Marines. Are you really going to let the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria go from the name of a group to the actual name of a country, a real place in eastern Syria and western Iraq? Now, my answer is yes, you are. Sit back and let these guys destroy themselves the same way they did in 2006. They are madmen. They cut people's hands off. They ban cigarette smoking. They dress women in complete head-to-toe black burkas and whatever everywhere they go. They engender hatred everywhere they go, these bin Ladenites. They're despicable. And so they may be welcome to help push Maliki's forces aside and all that, but I don't believe they have a very long-term future holding on to power in western, northwestern Iraq, or eastern Syria if America would just stay the hell out of it. Now, if they are smart to go along with their evil, they will provoke Iran into intervening and turn this into even more of a Sunni-Shia civil war, which, you know, would attract more people, radicalize more people to their cause and all that. We don't have to turn that against us. We could stay out of it, and we should, because look at our policies. George Bush gives all of western and northwestern Iraq, basically turns into Wild West, lawless jihadi stand for the last 11 years for these guys, and he wasn't even trying to. Obama actually fights wars for them in Libya and in Syria, and this is the result that we're dealing with. So it's clearly time for us to stop insisting that the U.S. government exists at all, and certainly stop intervening over there to protect us from the enemies that they've created for this, for us. And this is how far out of control it's gotten now.
Now, Scott, I know you are not a fan of Rand Paul, but I wonder if you were pleasantly surprised by the fact that he was willing in this case to say, you know, I just don't see how this could possibly be considered Obama's fault. None of it would have happened if it hadn't been for George W. Bush. Now, he has bought into the surge worked stuff, and his comments weren't perfect, but they're more than anybody else in the GOP these days is saying.
Yeah, well, and you notice how they didn't really fight with him about it. I mean, he was outright saying, hey, look, Obama's been more or less, he was careful, but he basically accused Obama of backing ISIS in Syria, and Candy Crowley pushed back a little bit out of her ignorance. But you notice he didn't get in all kinds of trouble politically for this all week. And the answer is because it's true. John McCain was over there posing on the porch with the Northern Storm Brigade, who were veterans of al-Qaeda in Iraq. Obama and McCain, both entire Republican and Democratic establishments, they're all guilty of treason up to their eyeballs. They don't have nothing to say to what Rand Paul said except silence. They're lucky he let them off the hook at that. But the problem is, too, then he turns around and says, but maybe we should do airstrikes. You know, I'm open to bombing them. You know, he still can't rule it out, even though he's right that Bush created this mess. Obama made it worse, not by leaving, but by the intervention that he's been doing in Syria next door. And it's time to do like Ron Paul and just say, hey, call it off. Just stop it. And so it's my undying frustration that he won't just shoot straight. He's always got to split the difference. And instead of being everything to everyone, he's going to end up being nothing to nobody. And it's a disgrace. Especially, I mean, he's the best Republican. He's the best senator ever, probably. I can't think of a better senator in all of American history. But compared to his father, he's falling so far short in really hammering home the message. And I think if someone had truly tried to cross-examine him and say, what do you mean Bush's war benefited Iran? What do you mean Obama's been backing ISIS in Syria? I bet you it seemed to me from the way he said it, he hadn't really done his homework. He's got his talking points correct, but does he really know how to defend those very controversial positions? I don't think so. And I think that is also a result of that lack of principle, because if he had the principle, then he would be very serious about being as good as he can possibly be on this stuff so that he can fight about it and win. What if he was up against Liz Cheney? I think she would eat him for lunch, and not because she's right about anything, but because she's ready to fight.
Scott, I want you to imagine the Middle East in 2003, going forward to 2014 with no U.S. interventions at all, no Iraq war, no intervention in Libya, no intervention anywhere, none of the drones, nothing. What does that part of the world look like?
Wow, can you imagine? To me, I just think, and look, you know, anything can happen in a counterfactual, it's all imaginary, whatever. But for me, you know, I'll go one up on your hypothetical. What if it had been a Ron Paul and then a Harry Brown administration from 88 through 2000,
yeah,
that kind of thing? And this was America's role in the world, was Harry Brown giving his Statue of Liberty speech and never shutting up about it, but meanwhile, leaving everyone else alone. I think that what we would have is massive, very generally speaking, you understand the term, liberal reform across the Middle East. Shia and Sunni Islam both need a reformation bad, you know? And the dawn of the 21st century would have been a hell of a great time to pursue, you know, spamming the crap out of them with Rothbard translated into Arabic on audiobook, right? It's all about liberty, individual liberty and property rights and autonomy and free choice. And you know, there ain't nothing like freely choosing to believe in Muhammad if you want to and that kind of thing. And this is the kind I would love to fight a culture war for the future of a libertarian world, Tom, if I didn't have my government massacring these people by the millions and claiming that they're doing it in the name of free markets and self-government. They're completely ruining my whole mojo here, and all libertarians who are like you and I, evangelical libertarians, and want to spread freedom and consider freedom to be the future of humanity. I think that, not that it would be a Rothbardian world in the Middle East, but I think that you could completely subtract, you know, I don't know, 90% of the right-wing reactionary blowback from the intervention that we've had this whole time, with no Al-Qaeda, with no holy wars, with no American support for the occupation in Palestine, in East Jerusalem, the West Bank, and the Gaza Strip, the Israelis would have made peace with their friends without all of America money and firepower to back them up. They would have ended the occupation and had, you know, reasonable peace terms with their neighbors. And you know what? Iraq and Syria might still be dictatorships, but they would be sure as hell in a lot better shape than they're in right now. And you know, it's just like Ron Paul says, if you really want to lead the world, and, you know, I admit it, I do. I am evangelical in my beliefs in that way. But the way to do that is by example. And so, you know, I can't say that everything would be perfect. Hell, maybe there would be a giant war between Saudi and Iran. I don't know. But it wouldn't have had to have been our guys that killed a million people over there, got a million people killed over there, and disgraced, in fact, you know, brand liberty for the next generations and that entire part of the world, where to them, liberty just means licentiousness with violence, right? It means the Americans' right to kill you, some liberty, yeah. Right? They completely bastardized our Declaration of Independence, Tom. It's a disgrace. And if it had been Ron and Harry instead of the Georges and Bill and Obama all this time, or, you know, up until that time when all of this started, I can only imagine it would have been so much better of a world. And it's not too late to start right now. In fact, I'll end with this because I know you need to let me go anyway. The Gallup poll did a whole book called Who Speaks for Islam? And they toured the entire Middle East from Morocco, all the Muslim so-called world, from Morocco to the Philippines. And they just interviewed the hell out of everybody on all these questions. And they don't hate us. And they, even after all this, this was in 2009 or something, 2010, so after the very worst of the Iraq war years, they said, you know, all across the Muslim world, they said they don't hate us. They hate our government, just like we do.
Well, there you go. I've thought it exactly that. That's exactly the best way to think about it. Can you believe there are other people in the world who also don't like Hillary Clinton? How about
right.
that? All right, Scott.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to tell people as we wrap up, in case they don't already know, I consider you to be a national treasure. People throw that term around much too loosely, but there aren't very many Scott Hortons in the world. People who are sound philosophically, who are also great on foreign policy and war, and who are as knowledgeable as you are, that I can go to and feel like, well, I know Scott knows the answer. Whatever it is, I know Scott knows the answer. There aren't that many people or institutions like that out there. We have the Ron Paul Institute now. We have antiwar.com. But most libertarians are talking about economic policy, and that's very important. Or they're talking about the 10th Amendment, and that's all wonderful too. But there's so much talk about that, and so little, relatively speaking, in terms of how many libertarians are doing it, who are talking about foreign policy the way you are, that, I mean, you are almost the indispensable man. I don't know what we would do without you. So I want, as we close here, I want you to tell people exactly how they can hear you talking about this stuff every single day.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I don't deserve even a small portion of that. I will say that at the root of almost every one of our domestic crises is our foreign policy. I mean, all of this domestic police state is the empire come home. Our economic problems is the result of the boom and the bust, which, as you know, is completely tied up in the expansion of the empire and the fraud of making it seem cheap and paying later in your time in the unemployment line and everything else. So all libertarian concerns, to me, all lead back to the empire. That's why I focus on it. And I'll urge others to take up the interest for the same reason if liberty here at home is really their interest, because it's mine too. And then my website is scotthorton.org, and I'm at Scott Horton Show on Twitter. Thank you.
And then people can listen to you on the Liberty Radio Network?
Oh, yeah. I'm on Liberty Radio Network, noon to 3 Eastern time at lrn.fm.
Okay, and then at the beginning of the show, I told people about the terrestrial stations that you're on, so now everybody's got everything they can know about Scott Horton, and if they forget something, they can check you out at scotthorton.org. All right, thanks for
being
here, Scott.
Thanks very much, Tom. Appreciate you having me on.
Thank you. All right, everybody, with Independence Day coming up, I am proud to announce that Kevin Gutzman's newest course for us at libertyclassroom.com is now up. It's a course on the American Revolution, and it is not the way you learned it in school, and you're going to love it. So if you're a member already of libertyclassroom.com, that course is up as of today. Have fun with it. Learn from it. It's great. I'm thrilled with it. It's just the material that I wanted to have conveyed. If you're not a member, well, now's your chance, because you can use coupon code Gutzman. Now, how do you spell Gutzman? How are we going to remember how to spell Gutzman? Well, it's G-U-T-Z-M-A-N. Do that in all caps. If you can't remember how to spell his name, when you're at libertyclassroom.com, just click on faculty and you'll see Gutzman, G-U-T-Z-M-A-N. Use that code in all caps and you'll get 50% off a subscription at libertyclassroom.com. And of course, if you're a supporting listener of this program, you get 60% off at libertyclassroom.com. Become a supporting listener, get transcripts of the interviews, and warm my heart at supportinglisteners.com. We got a bunch of great shows lined up for next week. As I say, I'm going to be talking to Pat Buchanan on the release date of his new book. That'll be July 8th. But next week, we're going to talk about how to cope with health care in this current situation with Obamacare and with the free market of a thing of the past in medical care in the United States, how to make it work financially. And, of course, with Independence Day coming up, we'll have Kevin Gutzman on to talk U.S. history. That's going to be a great conversation. So thanks for listening this week, everybody. We'll see you next week.
The Tom Woods Show.